Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Conscious Vibe Podcast,
where we elevate intellect through conscious dialogue
while exploring race, politics, business, and culture.
I'm Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
And I'm Charles D. Mitchell.
Charles, how you doing?
D, doing great, man.
Good. Special guest in the house, Sir Ryan Tillman. How are you, man?
I am doing phenomenal, man. Just got done leaving my part-time job, and I'm in the studio now. My part-time police officer job.
Part-time police officer, full-time law enforcement and community consultant. Also the owner of Breaking Barriers United, UNLV grad, and just all around good dude. It's a pleasure to have you today, man.
Man, it's a pleasure to be on, DJ. Man, I appreciate it, man. It's funny how God works and just being able to connect the dots and just meet all around good people. And Charles, same thing, man. I've heard nothing but good things, man. So it's a privilege and honor to be here today.
Appreciate you, Ryan.
Yeah, we had the only unfortunate thing is how we met. We met at a Dallas Cowboys. It was a DAC event, and Charles was a big Dallas Cowboy fan. So I guess we all have something in common here.
Oh, I know. Oh, man, I'm sorry, Charles, man. We was out. Hey, not to rub it in, but we was there living it up, too.
Definitely rubbing it in.
Yeah. So listen, man, let's sort of start with that event, Ryan, and talk about the award that you won, because we'd be remiss, man, if we didn't talk about that. So that was my first introduction to you, was that prestigious award that you won. So tell us a little bit about that. We'll get into Breaking Barriers United and then some history on you.
Yeah, for sure. So how that all came out to be, if we rewind the clock a little bit, when George Floyd was killed several years ago, you know, my phone started ringing off the hook because everybody was asking me what I thought about that whole situation. A lot of people were asking me because I was a full-time police officer. And I was, you know, like I said, I'm trying to bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community. And so when my phone was ringing, one of the rings just so happened to be a person that is connected to Dak Prescott. And so Dak, you know, pledged that he said, hey, I'm gonna try to bridge this gap between law enforcement and the community. That was one of the things he said right after that. And that's what he did. And so he went out there to go try to find people that can help him with his mission. And so somebody connected me to him. And that was about 2.5 years ago. So when I got on a Zoom call like we're on right now, I met Dak and we just kind of hit it off really, really quickly. Almost seemed like we were like brothers. It's just kind of funny. And so we set out on a mission. And one of the things that I did was I joined their foundation, which is Faith Fight Finish. And one of the goals is to bridge that gap. They have several other goals and missions that they are designed to do. But one of the goals was to bridge that gap between law enforcement and the community. So they brought me on. I started speaking at schools all across the Dallas area of Texas. I got to go to multiple different events. We hosted a forum, a community forum. And so I got a phone call by Shannon, Shannon is Dak's foundation manager. And she said, hey, Ryan, we're going to give you an award. And so I said, oh, okay, that's cool. So she said, you know, this is the first year we're going to do it. UPS is actually sponsoring the award. And so she said, we're going to call it the Game Changer Award. We're going to give it to you. So obviously I was humbled. I was privileged. But what's funny about it is, like, you know, I thought like this was like one of several awards that was going to be given that night. Like, I had no idea what to expect. They said, hey, we want you to give a speech. So I was like, okay, cool. I scratched a little things down on my notepad on my phone. So then when we got to the event, you know, we're sitting down and then they start, you know, Dak talks about the foundation and everything and what it's designed. We have dinner. And again, this is not trying to rub this all into Charles. I'm sorry, my brother. But we have dinner and all that stuff. And then right after the dinner segment, they played a video of the work that I was doing. And then they said, this year's Game Changer Award goes to me for all the work that I had been doing in the community in order to bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community. And then after that was over, it went right into the raffle. So I didn't realize that I was the only awardee that night. So it was probably, outside of getting married and outside of having my wonderful kids, it was probably up there as one of the top experiences of my life, man, to receive such an award at such an event. It definitely was game changing for me.
That's awesome, man.
That's so phenomenal. You know, I obviously being a big Cowboy fan, but also more than that, I love when athletes who are in the public eye and have such a platform like that decide that they want to make a huge difference, mm-hmm. and be a part of the community in this way. You know, but, you know, the burning question I have, Brian, I was just looking through your background and I noticed that you spent a lot of time number of years working in financial services, building a career, building a platform. And I was just trying to like, how did he get from financial services? You know, my guess is you were probably pretty successful taking care of people in terms of insurance and, you know, their finances. How did you make that transition into law enforcement, man? The stuff that just, you know, nobody values the work anymore. You know, everybody just wants to talk trash about the police and, you know, we don't want them anymore. You went over to an area where, you know, it would have been easy to continue, it seems like, to do what you were doing, continue on that path of being, you know, really successful in this work, but really moving to a place where it was hard to try to make a difference, but you decided that's what you wanted to do. Let's talk about that.
You know what's so funny is out of all these years I've been doing this work, I get a lot of redundant questions that are asked to me all day long, all day long. This is the first time I've ever had somebody ask me why I left financial services to get into what I'm doing. So I love it, man. So funny story. It's really a funny story. So when I graduated from UNLV, played football there. I had aspirations of starting my own business and stuff like that. Moved home. I got a job at Abercrombie & Fitch right out the gate, which I hated. It's probably one of the worst jobs ever. Taught me a lot of lessons, but I hated it. Probably going to be able to and be entitled to a lawsuit that, you know, I got cancer because of all the perfume and cologne they sprayed in that store. But that story for a different day. You know, so I'm working at Abercrombie & Fitch, and my wife had got pregnant with our first child. And so I was like, oh, shoot, like, you know, this is a wake up call. So I was looking for jobs online, trying to figure out what else I can do in order to, you know, get out of working at Abercrombie. So I had got a I applied for this position. I got a phone call right away and I didn't really know what it was. It was kind of vague. So what it was it was a position for an insurance firm, which was at the time it was Primerica. I feel like I had got duped. I was like, oh man, this is just another multi-level marketing pyramid scheme, stuff like that. So I showed up, I met this guy. We connected pretty well. He kind of went over everything. And so I, you know, they showed me the numbers and my daddy didn't raise no fool. I was like, oh, okay, well, like I could probably do something decent. And so I started out, got my insurance license, got my Series 6 license. I was on track to get my Series 65 and all the others, or Series 65, I think it was. And not only was I getting all my licenses, but I was killing it just because, I mean, God has given me the ability to speak to people. And so I started closing a lot of business really, really quickly. I started getting a lot of assets under management really quickly on the investment side of things once I got that going. And so I promoted up pretty quickly. But the thing that was interesting was it wasn't consistent. I didn't have the benefits that I needed. And so me as a new dad, I was like, man, I want to take care of my family the right way. I need something else. And so my dad's friend was a police officer. He was a captain for a local agency where I'm at. He was like, hey, Ryan, you would be a great police officer. I was like, man, I ain't working for the man. I ain't about to be no pig. Like this literally was my mentality. Like I had bad experiences with cops. So for like 2 years, like no joke, 2 years, he was on me like, bro, you got to become a cop. So I was like, nah. So finally one day I was like, you know, let me just pray about it. So I prayed about it. And I said, God, if this is what you want me to do, open the door. If not, just close the door. So I prayed about it, man. And I put a couple applications in and like the rest was history, man. I got hired from the moment I dropped my first application. I got hired 3 months later, which is pretty unheard of because it's pretty extensive process it takes to get into law enforcement. And so that's kind of when I got my foot in the door. I start seeing law enforcement. And it's funny because I still, even after going through the academy, even while I was on training, I still didn't know if this was a job I wanted to do because I just felt like unsettled in my spirit. I felt like I was messing with people all the time. I didn't like that feeling. And it wasn't until I got off of training that I realized that I could make this job my own. Like I can do it the way I want to do it. And then I also got to see where the changes needed to be made within the profession. And that's kind of how my business started.
I love it. You know, because I know that road of financial services, from what I understand, you know, a lot of it's, you know, starting out straight commission.
It was all commission.
Exactly.
It was all commission.
To really go through that. And my guess also is that you learned a ton about yourself. And I imagine that it's all transferable into what you do today, right? In terms of how you connect with people, in terms of how you really get them to see where you're trying to get them to move with, you know, whether it's a conversation about something that they're not doing right or a path that you want them to move along, to get them to go in the right direction, so to speak? I mean, I imagine it's all relative.
Oh, let me tell you, Charles, man, that I got so many life lessons from working as an insurance consultant or a financial advisor that have transferred to everything I do now. I've always been a go-getter. I've always been an athlete my whole life, and I'm sure you guys can relate. And so I always had this spirit of like, I want to be whatever I do, I want to be the best at it. So I want to be the best. And so when I got into financial services, it was kind of that mentality. So I remember studying or listening to tapes of overcoming objections, because, like, you know, you sit at the kitchen table, you got to overcome objections. And this is one of the ones that always stuck with me was, you know, if somebody, you're selling somebody insurance, and, you know, they're like, oh man, like, I've had a bad experience with Primerica, this and that, man, I don't want that. And so one of the objections was like, oh, okay, like, I completely understand what you're saying. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever been to Chick-fil-A or they were like, what's your favorite restaurant? And like, oh, Cheesecake Factory. Okay, you've been to Cheesecake Factory. So let me ask you, if you went to Cheesecake Factory one day and you received bad service and you just had the worst waiter ever, would that stop you from coming back to Cheesecake Factory again? And most likely they're going to say, well, no. And I'm like, well, it's kind of the same thing. Maybe you had a bad day, just so I'm sorry if you had a bad day. So I start learning and getting good at anything. I mean, you say, oh, no, I can't meet with you tonight. Oh, okay, no problem. So that just tells me tonight's not good. So give me, what about Wednesday or Thursday? Which one works better? Always give them something to pick from. And so those little things, man, it transferred into law enforcement to where, man, I could talk to somebody in handcuffs many times. I'm actually on our crisis negotiation team. So if somebody's going through a mental health crisis or they're going through a situation where they've done something bad, now it's same principles, just a different capacity. So now I'm on the phone trying to understand what they need. What can we do to help benefit you so we can get you out of that house or get you out of the situation that you're in? So yes, man, answer your question. There's so many different things that I learned from that. And just in the ability to have tough skin, man. I have doors closed on me many a times. People said no many a times. And so it also developed that as well.
No mistakes in anything you do. You can learn from everything, right?
Absolutely, man. The faster you fail, the faster you succeed is my motto.
Exactly right. Fail so fast, exactly. My motto.
So what city are you in now, man? And tell us where you grew up.
So I live in this in the Corona area of California, but I grew up in Rialto. And Rialto is a very interesting city. I always like to say I grew up in Rialto and San Bernardino because where I grew up, actually, the high school I went to was actually within the city of San Bernardino. A lot of people don't realize that, but it's in the city of San Bernardino. And a lot of my family, my dad's side of family, grew up in San Bernardino or live in San Bernardino, his mom and everybody. I spent most of my time in the summer times with my grandmother and stuff. So I grew up in Rialto and San Bernardino, which, you know, I'm actually so glad that I grew up there because it wasn't I had great parents, really, really good parents, strong working people, stayed together my whole life, taught me what it's like to be a godly man, to be, you know, this and that. But at the same time, the area and environment around me was not the best. I mean, most of my buddies growing up, they grew up with a single mom in the house. A lot of my buddies in high school had went to jail, went to prison for armed robberies. And some of my buddies had died. And one of my buddies died, got shot 5 times in his driveway, was killed like my sophomore year of high school. And so going through those different tragedies at a young age, it really started allowing me to get the life experience that I needed, which obviously as well was transferable into the job that I have now.
That's great, Ryan. You know, one of the most impressive things, man, I think about you and the work that you do is you can't treat this as a job. You're dedicating your life to finding alignment between communities and law enforcement or public safety. And you formed Breaking Barriers United. Can you tell us about what that organization does and why you formed it and how things are going for you?
Absolutely. So you hit the nail right on the head. I don't treat my job as a job. I always say this is a calling. And the reason I say it's a calling is because the stuff that we deal with is not for the average person to see every single day. I mean, just recently, I heard some of my partners responded to a situation where the parents accidentally smothered their child while they were sleeping. And then, you know, come to find out, you know, they also have another child that's not about to make it because they have cancer. Those are situations, man, that, you know, we shouldn't be having to go to on a day-to-day basis, but we do. And so, and then we also, the reason I say it's also a calling because we have the one profession in the world, no matter what it is, even over the military, where we have the ability to take a person's rights away from them and even their life away from them. Think about it. Even a judge doesn't even have that capacity. If a judge wants to take somebody's life, it has to go through a jury, it has to go through a trial and all this other stuff, and then it has to go through a whole sentencing process. We are the one job that has the ability to take a person's rights away from them on the spot, as well as their life if we are in fear of our own life. And so that is a responsibility that shouldn't be taken lightly. And sadly, there are people in this profession that shouldn't have the ability to carry that responsibility just because they're not mature enough to do it. And so I have taken that and wanted to take it to a different level, wanted to really transform the profession from the inside out. And so I started Breaking Barriers United because I realized that there were changes that did need to be made. There were changes from the inside out that needed to be made. And so over time, I started to see what those changes were. I started to see where the areas of improvement were. And I said, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to start to develop this bond within the community that can't be broken. And the only way I'm going to be able to do that is by being transparent, being honest, and call it righting our wrongs, but also righting a lot of the rights that we do. And so I did that, you know, about 2015, and it's been a phenomenal journey ever since, man. I can't even begin to tell you where it's begin to take me. I mean, obviously the Dallas Cowboy thing was a big thing, meeting you. I've had opportunities to be interviewed by Oprah and all sorts of different things. So, but you know, I only do that because I truly feel like it's my God's given mission while I'm on this earth.
Hey, Ryan, I can imagine with this type of work that you're doing, truly, truly breaking barriers, right? Because I think this perspective that a lot of people have about law enforcement and this disconnect between communities and police, it's an unfortunate story, right, that we're all dealing with. I think this is a really opportunity to like change that narrative. Give us, if you can, give us an illustration of just like one really good thing out of all this work that has come out of it in terms of changing a situation or scenario or changing a community or something that has really had a tremendous impact that you can look at your organization and say, we had our hands on that. We made that possible.
Wow. That's a great question. And there's so many different layers to it. I'll give you a couple examples that if I have to look back that really resonate with me, these would be it. One of them was actually just recent. It was on Monday. So I was doing a presentation on Monday. I was speaking to a group of campus safety officers and school resource officers because they just got ready to start the school year. So I did my presentation and I had a young lady come up to me in uniform. She's a police officer. And she says, she looks at me and she says, "It is so good to meet you." She said, "You are the reason that I became a police officer." She said, "I had no aspirations of doing it. I've been following your work for so long, and you have truly inspired me to go out there and become a police officer to do your life's work." And it really wow. It gave me chills because I was like, wow, like this is why I do what I do. Like this is exactly why, because not only do I want people to go into the profession, but I want people to go into the profession to do the right thing. And so that was a moment for me that will last a lifetime. And I get people, I get hit up all the time on Instagram or a lot of my social media pages telling me very similar things, but it hits a little differently when it's in person because you can just look in their eyes and you can just see the passion that they have. So that was probably one of the biggest moments for my life, or, you know, at least for my career. But the other thing was, I have really good relationships with people that I would have least expected. Before we hopped on this call today, I was on the phone with a friend of mine named Artie, and Artie committed a murder when he was younger, got sentenced as a 16-year-old juvenile, got sentenced to life because he was tried as an adult, spent 25 years in solitary confinement, got out and changed his whole life around. If you guys didn't know anything about me or Artie, you guys would think that we are best of friends. I also have another friend of mine named Leon Ford. Leon, unfortunately, was shot 5 times by police and is paralyzed from the waist down. If you didn't know anything about Leon's story, you would just think that maybe he had an accident or maybe he was born that way. You would never know that a police officer took his ability to walk away. And if you saw me and Leon's relationship without knowing anything about it, you would think that we were probably related, either brothers or cousins. And so I can go on and on about the different types of relationships that I have with people. And so when we talk about what the imprint of my work of Breaking Barriers has done. It's allowed me to bridge the gap with people that you would least expect. And so by having relationships like that, by having relationships with Leon, by having relationships with Artie, what it does is it literally takes the excuse out of everybody to say that we can change or we can bridge the gap. You see, right now we're living in a society where everything is polarized. You got to pick being on the left or you got to pick being on the right. You got to pick I'm being pro cop. You got to pick I'm anti cop. And nobody understands that we can all be right in the middle and we can see the both sides. And so when we came together as friends, it really is a living, breathing example that we have no excuse. We should all be striving for to bridge that gap and be neutral in the way we view things. It doesn't mean that you have to change your stance or your opinions on certain ideas, but what it does mean is that you can connect with one another in order to grow and understand a different side that you wouldn't be accustomed to if you didn't have that ability.
Man, those are beautiful stories. And I think, you know, two things that are takeaways for me. You know, one, when we're being ourselves and just moving through life, you never know who you're impacting, right? You know, people are watching. And people are watching, and how you carry yourself, the things that you do really have a lot of impact and a lot of value to others, right? Depending on obviously what those things are. But when you're doing them in the sense that you're trying to help others and do things for them or to make life better for someone else in just how you move every single day, it translates, man. And people see it and people really look to that as inspiration for things in their own lives. And I think the other thing to take away is that, you know, authentic relationships matter. And, you know, when we have relationships with people that we build throughout life, it can change the course of history in just about anything. And that your testimony of that with those relationships you described with those young men who've obviously turned their lives around, but also who hold true character and no bitterness, right? You know, the young man you spoke about who shot by a police officer has a great relationship with you. And, you know, those are things that I think show that we can change just about anything in our world when we have authentic relationships and we see people for who they are and not necessarily for what we think they are.
You're so right, Charles. And you know, I was listening to Simon Sinek, I think it was. And, you know, he says, you know, I get on stage all the time to speak. And one of the things that he learned, one of the most valuable lessons that he learned was when he gets on stage, you know, a lot of times people, when they're out there speaking or giving keynotes, it's about them. It's about their record, their track record. Oh, I've done this. I've done that. You know, I've been on this. I've been on that. And he said, I usually never bring up any of that stuff because when I'm up on stage asking myself, what can I give you? How can I serve you? What can I do? And it's that little formula that I realized that really that's what transcends. That's what really transforms a nation from inside out. It's because it's this idea of, you know, you before me. It's this idea of, you know, service before self. And so I try to strive for that. You know, sometimes I may miss the mark. We're all humans. But if we can adopt that service before self mentality, man, it's endless of the possibilities of things we can accomplish.
I love it.
Hey, so Ryan, you know, obviously there's a culture, a unique culture that exists in every community across every state, city, county. And the same for each police force. There are unique cultures based on demographics, psychographics, et cetera. Part of the work that you're doing now, which I'm privy to and, you know, connected with, is trying to understand a lot more about these cultures at a local level, but opportunities to align and unite and bridge some of the gaps with these cultures. And some of that might look like, for lack of a better term, being the seal of approval, right? For how communities and law enforcement should be operating in order to bridge those gaps. Can you talk a little bit about that work that you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first things first is that if there is law enforcement listening to this episode, we have to come to the realization that we're not perfect. And I know people understand that, but I don't know if they truly believe it, you know, or they're naive to it. That's important to recognize because when we, you know, see situations that occur and we turn a blind eye or we can't acknowledge our wrongs, then we're missing the mark with the people that we serve of our community. And so one of the things I've learned early on is that we have to have the ability to right our wrongs and stand up and when we're wrong and say, hey, you know, we messed up, you know, and that way people can trust us more for the things that we do right, although they may not look right. So as we get into talking about the seal of approval and what we can do to improve things, one of the things I've been, you know, on this mission to do is figure out what ways can we certify departments to show that this department is doing things the right way. Unfortunately, what we're seeing in society is that, you know, you have a police officer, they go out there, they do something that's controversial, and then now they have a whole bunch of people that are trying to tear the police off, the police department down. And so unfortunately, what ends up happening is now the police department becomes reactive in responding to that stuff. And a lot of things will crumble because they weren't set up or positioned in a way to thrive, even despite the situation that they were in. So if police departments could take a proactive approach by, you know, having the best equipment, having the best training, having the best defensive tactics person that's going to come in and teach them how to, you know, to defend themselves, having the best policies. And if you can have an assessment that evaluates them to show where they're at, where they're on track to go, and then these are the recommendations that we want you to implement. And then by you doing those things, or at least you working towards those things, now if you have a situation where it might be controversial, the community, everybody can come in from the outside looking in and say, you know what? This was an isolated incident. This had nothing to do with a bad police department. This had nothing to do with a bad police chief. This had nothing to do with bad officers. This was an isolated incident. This is one bad person. And so therefore, the agency does not need to crumble because of the actions of this one person. So I like to take more of a proactive response as opposed to a reactive response. And sadly, what we've seen time and time again is agencies being reactive to what occurs when they least expect it. We saw it in Ferguson. We saw it in Nebraska or Kenosha, Wisconsin. And we've seen it. We saw it in Minneapolis when Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd. And so how can we address these? We see it in schooling. I mean, think about it. When you go to certain schools, I remember in California growing up, I remember when my high school got the seal of approval, it was called a California Distinguished School. And they even put the seal of approval on the building and said, this is a California Distinguished School. So I started to ask myself, what does that mean? And you see it in business. You have the Better Business Bureau. How many times have you gone on a website and said, this is affiliated with the Better Business Bureau, whatever it may be. So we do it in all these other things. Why can't we do it in policing? So that's one of the things that I've been working on to try to make our profession a little bit better.
Brian, let's talk about time. I mean, I can't imagine that being a police officer is less than a 40-hour week job. You got a consultancy, community organization that, you know, has you, you know, flying all over the country, rubbing elbows with star quarterbacks.
Oh, hey, DJ, I think you're I hear a little bitterness right there.
Mr. Family, you got a growing family. Like, how do you do it all, man? Like, what's time like for you? How do you, like, spread yourself so that you get some you time? Because I know that's important for us. I don't know that we all take enough time, particularly as Black men. I don't know if we take enough time for ourselves to really, you know, self-care, self-love. How do you take care of yourself, and what's time like for you to try to make sure you get everything in that you need to get for the folks that you count, that count on you and that you count on?
So there's a few lessons to be learned. So you're right. I'm gonna give you guys three things. So yes, as a 40 hours a week as a police officer and trying to do everything I'm doing, time is just crazy. You're busy. It's hard to do things. And I was doing that for a while, and I'll kind of tell you what I've transitioned to since. But the first thing I want, there's lessons to be learned. The first thing I've learned is to be intentional about your time. You got to be intentional. You can't, if I really look at and evaluate my day, there's really not a lot of time that is really being wasted. Every minute, every hour is almost accounted for the most part. Now, I'm not the most organized person, but I'm organized enough to know that I have a calendar. I know the things that I got to do and when I got to be somewhere. Maybe that's the old college football player in me. I remember when I played college football, I remember they had our schedule lined out to a T, you know, 5:50 wake up, 6 o'clock, you in the gym, 6:15, you doing this, 7 o'clock study, all that stuff. So I'm very intentional about my time and how I schedule things and prioritizing things. Obviously, as a business owner now, you know, one of those things has to be, does it make money? Because if it don't make money, I mean, it may not make sense. And I'm not saying that like, hey, it's all about the money, because I don't want people to mistake my words. It's not all about the money. Trust me, it's all about the time. But at the same time, if you want to be able to have more time, you need to have something that's going to provide money. So I'm very strategic.
Don't make excuses around money, brother. I mean.
Oh, okay. Yes. I don't know who my audience is or who's going to listen to this. So I want them to understand that. So that you got to make sure that you're very strategic on what you're planning, and is it generating you something? Are you going to be able to leverage that to gain more money? Are you going to leverage that to gain more time? What is it going to, but if it's a waste of time, then I try to say no to those opportunities. So that kind of leads me into number two, is learn how to say no. I have a big heart to change a lot of things, and I still struggle with this, but it's hard for me to tell people no. It's very, very hard to tell people no. But it's an essential thing if you want to have success. So one of the things I've learned is the ability to say no. The other thing that I will say is, and the last two things is, be intentional about your quality time and how you use it. And like you did say, I mean, you need to take time for yourself. One of the things I love to do is I love to golf. So every Monday, I'm usually on a golf course somewhere. And I know it may sound selfish. I know it may sound like just some people listening to it, but I do it because that's my time to kind of just regenerate. That's my kind of just clock out and just take my focus on something else, put my focus on something else. Because usually when I'm not on a golf course, if I'm not, you know, at home with the family and my wife, I'm always consumed by my business. And my wife will tell you, I'm thinking about what's going on, I'm thinking about this. And so the golf course is one place where not only do I enjoy it, but I also can divert my attention to focusing on anything that I enjoy that's pleasurable. And then the last thing is, what I've learned is, when you can create value, when you can add value to other people, then doors, unexpected doors will open. In April, actually at the beginning of this year, I got to a point in my business where I was getting really busy. I was traveling all the time. And then once I traveled, I came back and I worked 40 hours a week as a police officer. So I only had like one day off maybe. And it really wasn't a day off, because I'm trying to catch up on getting rest. And so me and my wife were just like, wow, like, you know, something's got to change. Like, we got to figure something out. So I prayed about it. I said, you know, either you go all in on your business or you go all in at your day job as a police officer. So, I made the decision to go all in on my business. And so I asked the question to my chief. I said, hey, chief, would you allow me to be a reserve? And unfortunately, he said, hey, Ryan, you know, the reserve program is kind of outdated. We kind of retired that thing away, so we don't have that yet. But he said, let me think some things over. So 2 weeks, he came back to me. 2 weeks later, he came back to me and said, hey, Ryan, I got something for you. He said, how would you be interested in working part-time as a police officer, you know, and you can do all the community engagements where you go out there, you do the neighborhood watch meetings, you do our social media pages and stuff like that. And he was like, how many days of work a week could you commit to work? Or how many days a month could you commit to work? I said, about four. He's like, oh man, that's great. Four it is. And wow. So I share that story to say this is like, when you add value, kind of going back to what we talked about earlier, when you add value to other people, other doors will open. And so you can create new opportunities that don't even exist because you bring something, a different element. So this isn't to say, oh, look at me. Oh, look what I've done. This is just more to show that like when you add value, when people see the value that you bring to the table, unexpected things can happen. And so that's allowed me to manage my time better, because now I work part-time as a police officer and I've been able to go all in on my business.
Fantastic. Yeah. You know, my wife always says to me, no is a complete sentence.
Hey, I love that. I'm going to use that.
I still haven't learned it yet, but I do understand the concept. Makes sense.
So Ryan, let's go back a little bit, man, prior to your professional life. You brought up football a couple of times, man. Charles and I talk a lot about the power of sport and the impact sport has on us as young men, especially as we start our careers and self-confidence and that sort of thing. What role does sport play in your life? And when did you figure out athleticism is more than just being on the field?
Man, sports probably single-handedly had one of the biggest impacts in my life other than God, because it taught me so many different things about myself. It taught me that, you know, even when stuff is tough, I can still push through. It taught me that, you know what, team is bigger than you. You got to put everybody else before yourself. It taught me how to be confident in myself. Like, you know, especially as a DB, I mean, you guys know this. I mean, especially as a DB, we the pretty boys on the field. We the ones that's cocky. We the ones that starting fights with everybody. And so like as a DB, you know, you're out there and you start to develop this confidence about yourself. And so as a DB, there's plays where you might get burned. And when you get burned, like, you can't allow that to just that dark cloud to continue to swarm over. You gotta forget about it. So I think, you know, sports is so good because it teaches you so much about yourself. It teaches you how to be resilient. It teaches you, you know, how to lead. I mean, depending on what sports you play. So I definitely encourage people to do something within the realm of sports. Now, some people may not have an athletic bone in your body, but if you don't have an athletic bone in your body, you can't play football, you can't play basketball, baseball, whatever. There's still things that you can go find to compete in. And I think it's competition is what really brings out the character of a person. There's something about you training, you practicing to be the best at what you are, you know, to be an expert in your craft. There's something about competition. So I think that even if you don't have that ability to play a certain sport, you can still go out and find something to be competitive in. And I know for me, that is what's allowed me to, you know, obtain certain things in my life to this point, because I learned at a young age to have that grit. And then on top of that, last thing I'll say is, like, it wasn't all easy for me. I was not that guy that was just naturally gifted with all the talent. So I want, if you're here, if you're listening to this right now, don't think that you have to be naturally gifted with all the talent in the world to go and be that guy that can reach the pinnacle of your career. I walked on as a college football player at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. You know, I walked on and I had to bust my butt. And after a year and a half, 2 years, I obtained the full scholarship, which is not, it's not an easy thing to do. And if people ask me the question, would I go back and do it all over again? I wouldn't share if I could, would I change anything? If I can go back, I wouldn't change anything, because that taught me how to have grit. Like, that taught me that, look, like, you're not going to get this easy, but it's going to be so much more valuable and worth it once you do get it, you know? So I wouldn't change being a walk-on if it saved my life, because that right there also taught me a lot of different lessons that I've been able to apply to my life now.
And it made you who you are today, you know, carry that
absolutely
all the time. Yeah. That's fantastic. Totally agree.
Did you grow up playing other sports, Ryan?
Yeah, I grew up playing golf, baseball, and football. And now, one thing I will say, if I could go back and change some things, I will go back and maybe focus a little bit more on baseball.
Baseball. Yeah, man. Yeah, baseball is a sport, man. I'm telling you.
Baseball is a sport.
We all played growing up. All three of us played baseball growing up. And I think we all probably say the same thing. That Charles loves hoops. He loves hoops the way you and I love football. And
yeah, baseball, I was the hoops guy, man. I gave up baseball when I was 13 and ended up walking onto my college baseball team.
Oh, wow. That's dope.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, to DJ's point, like, baseball has so much, particularly you look at, you know, economically today. I mean, those guys get paid.
Basketball, absolutely.
Far behind. But, I mean, baseball is just a great sport in a lot of ways. And there's so much strategy and, you know, skill. And, you know, there's so much to baseball, man. I really love the sport as well.
Let me add one point to that. And this is a good conversation. So, you know, culturally, I think we're probably similar, because as we grew up, I mean, all of our icons play football or basketball, like, for the most part, most of our icons did. So culturally, it was, and especially in the Black culture, it's just like football, basketball. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. And looking back, I'm like, man, baseball is so much more valuable in so many different ways. You preserve your body, financially speaking. And I'm like, and our athleticism can take you a lot further in baseball than it does the people that actually play it now. And so that transcends beyond just sports. If you look at, like, economically speaking, and how we look at things, like, culturally, we're always looking at entertainment. We're always looking at, I got to make it entertainment. I got to make it in sports, when it's like, no, go out there, build a business, go out there and buy real estate, acquire real estate. So I think we have to start learning or teaching people. That's one of my things, is how can I go out there and teach the next coach? Like, we got to think outside the box. Like, you know, the things that, what you think is traditional is not traditional. I got to show you how to think unconventionally.
Yeah, I love that. You know, you throw another monkey wrench out there. I've gotten hooked over the last probably month or so watching F1, Formula One racing. Mm. And
a lot of people have.
Yeah, man. Watching Lewis Hamilton. And you want to talk about transcending relative to race and sport, and how he's dominating in a field that we've just never been in, period. And it just shows you, you know, that competitive nature. I mean, you know, he talks about just being an athlete, right? And being that athlete who's, you know, driven to compete, driven to, you know, show all the naysayers what he's capable of and what he can do. and being the best at it, you know, all those things, to your point, really translate into what we can be as human beings and the best that we can be, even outside the sport. One of the first things you said was that when you played football at UNLV, you said, I aspired to be in business. You didn't say I aspired to be in the NFL. That's not what you said. You know, I picked that up. I was like, you know what? That tells me a lot.
You're so right, man. It's just because business provides you the opportunity, man, to leave generational wealth, a legacy. And it's the same thing, man. We can take the same principle into law enforcement. That's why, you know, I'm big on this. Like, you know, there's so many people that don't like law enforcement. I'm like, man, but if you go into law enforcement, like, law enforcement directly correlates to athletics in so many different ways. You got to compete. You got to train. You got to be the best if you want to promote up. And I'm like, there's so many people, so many athletes that would be phenomenal police officers, but because they get hung up on what the culture says about it, they never even give themselves a chance.
Well, the beauty of what you're doing, Ryan, you're not just young men, the young lady who came up to you and said, you know, she saw something in you that convinced her she could take this path. So one of the great things you're doing, man, is you're inspiring people not even knowing it. So I think these conversations are fantastic.
So look, I appreciate you, D.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So we got a few minutes left. One of the things Charles and I like to do, man, is give you the opportunity to ask us any questions or the opportunity to touch on something we may have missed with you.
So I would definitely love to ask you guys questions. I mean, you guys, you know, as a young Black man, I mean, y'all look young as ever, but I know DJ's age only because he told me. I'm trying to look like that when I'm his age too. But I mean, what would you say to, you know, obviously my goal is to touch the younger generation below me. I'm 35 years old. But what would you say to tell somebody like me, like, you know, that's trying to get there? Because I, by no means have I made it to where I want to get to. And DJ, I know you've obtained a lot of success within your life. And I can only imagine that, Charles, you have as well, you know, great minds think alike, and you guys also keep good company. So what would you tell somebody like me that's on, you know, this road to trying to get to a place of financial stability, security, and also being able to thrive in a very difficult market?
Charles, you want me to jump in?
Yeah, jump in, buddy.
You know, Ryan, I got to tell you, first of all, like, you're doing a whole lot of things right, man. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, part of the secret sauce, if there is one, is all the things that you talked about, right? Work hard. You know, DJ and I talk about this all the time, that there's nothing that's easy. Nothing in life is easy. So if you're going to take that path of, you know, greatest resistance, meaning, you know, everybody's going this way, well, that means you probably want to go that way, right? You know, and go against the grain a lot of times, because, you know, people move in herds because they don't know what fear drives people in directions where opportunity could exist somewhere else, right? Where it doesn't feel as comfortable, or you don't feel like that may be an area where it makes sense in the moment. But if there's anything I would impart on you, aside from some of the things you've already spoken about, cash is king. And, you know, being able to be in a position to capitalize when things aren't going well in the economy, you know, real estate, for example, you know, one of the greatest lessons is to be able to, when things are on sale, and I mean not in Neiman Marcus,
yep,
but when things in the economy are below value, having the wherewithal financially, either through resources or assets or cash being number one, obviously, you can take advantage of those things, and that's the path for building wealth over the long term. And so that's one of the things DJ and I talk about this all the time in our private conversations, and obviously in our public conversations in the podcast. But that's one of the tenets that I try really, really hard, you know, to have a big part of my life in terms of how I move financially and in my business and in my work world.
Man, thank you. So that you just kind of gave me a little epiphany. I need to hear that, man. Definitely. And I'll tell you guys why offline here in a minute, but that you just gave me a little epiphany.
Yeah, I tell you quickly, I'll pick up on the last one that Charles finished with, is financial liberation is important. It allows you to do so many things. A, it allows you to operate with one self-identity, man. You're not operating in conflict. And you and I have talked a little bit about that, Charles, and I talk about it a lot. It allows you to spend time with your family and ensure that they're growing and moving in the direction that is good for you and them. And then it puts you in circles, man, where you start to value not the money itself, but the ability to move the way you need to move to achieve what you want. And that's what's most important about financial liberation and financial wealth and financial health, is allowing you to operate in freedom. Mm. And that's really what's important, to think the way you think freely, move freely, and remove obstructions from your life. The second one is, and I see this in you, and you started this at an earlier age than I did, is to embrace this vessel mentality where you're a vessel for other people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound fun at first. You know, us being self-centered and, you know, making money and doing things we want to do feels like it's pleasurable. And it's hard to imagine finding pleasure in being a vessel for other people. But obviously, for example, let's put the three of us in this conversation together. So when you get into more conversations like this, as you already realize, you see the advantage of being a vessel and the beauty of being a vessel and the benefits of being a vessel. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy your life as an individual. As a matter of fact, you enjoy life more because it puts you in different rooms and situations. So that vessel mentality was probably something I adopted a little bit later in life. I'm an only child. I got Virgo issues. I got a lot going on, man. But at some point, I was able to kind of make a shift to understand the value and appreciate that and becoming, you know, an educator and things like that, man. So that's my two cents.
Man, I appreciate that. That's so valuable to me. And I'm taking notes because, you know, I'm always trying to improve myself, man. I never, you know, when I always tell people, I said, when I leave this earth, I want God to be like, you left it all on the field, man. So whatever I can do to do that, man, that's my goal. And so I appreciate you guys taking your time to even allow me to ask you guys questions.
Ryan, it's been a real pleasure, man. This is what we do this for, you know, because we get these rich conversations with the people who are literally moving the world. And you're doing that in your work, man, not just in your professional life, but your personal world as well. It's fantastic.
Thank you, Charles, man. I can't wait to meet in person. That's for sure.
Likewise. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you coming out?
Yeah, I knew DJ's gonna make a joke. I knew it was coming. I had a joke about the golf course.
Tell you, are you coming out here soon, Ryan?
I'll be out there in December.
Okay. Well, Charles and I will probably be in Southern Cal before that. I know Charles will.
Yep.
And I need to. So we need to make something.
Well, when Charles comes, let me know if you can come with him, and we'll pick a time and we'll go hit it, man. Like,
how far are you from say the North County, San Diego area?
I'm from San Diego. I'm about an hour 15, but I'm always looking for a good excuse to go down to San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, I got a spot in Encinitas. DJ and I trying to get some do a little quick guys trip over there for a long weekend. We should all hang.
Hey, say less. Say less. Say less, man. Yeah, I'll put my sticks in the car, man. We good to go.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a plan. So, Ryan, man, I appreciate you spending time with Charles and I. I'm so glad you guys had a chance to connect today and appreciate you sharing who you are with us.
Man, thank you guys so much, man. I appreciate you guys. If I could ever do anything for you or anybody of your audience, man, I'm an open book.
Thank you for joining us.
And check us out on tcvpodcast.com.